So on this episode, we talk about Bryce's history, like how he started, how he got into the industry. We talk about Evo, why Evo was founded, and what the purpose of Evo.com is. We get into a lot of the other things that he does, which includes the past life, La Familia, restaurant venues, his career as a pro athlete, and how he feels about that. We also talked about how he keeps everything in check and how he keeps his work-life balance in check and why he wanted to start his own company in the first place. Be sure to tune into this one. Thanks for listening. So we have Bryce Phillips, founder and CEO of Evo here. Bryce, what's going on, man?
Yeah, just here at the office and working away, trying to get stuff done.
Cool. How's your ski season been? Has it been mostly ski, mostly board? Like, what's your program been like?
Yeah, like for over the years, I've skied a lot more than I've snowboarded. But over the last couple of years, I've really ramped up snowboarding. It's just super fun to mix it up. You know, even when I'm traveling, like last 2 years of Japan, I've brought both and have just been absolutely loving it. So. That's been cool. You know, it's exciting to learn and try to kind of improve at something that you just haven't done as much. Of course, I still absolutely love to ski and I've been doing plenty of that as well.
Right. So you are, obviously you're involved in Evo, but you were an athlete before that, right? But backing up, even further, I mean, where'd you grow up? How'd you get into the whole thing?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Oregon. It's called Roseburg, Oregon. Yep. Not a lot of people have spent time there. Kind of the common feedback I get when people ask me where I'm from, you know, people have like stopped for gas on the way to California type of thing. Yep. So anyways, 15,000 people. And grew up there. My dad took a job in the forestry industry. And we so we weren't super close to actual ski hills, but we were about 2.5 hours away. So my uncle introduced me to skiing in fifth grade at a little mountain called Mount Ashland. Really cool, soulful little place. And, you know, like after that introduction, I was just hooked. And he didn't just take me, he actually paid for it. So he kind of got me addicted, if you will. But it's been, it's just been amazing. Like that really kind of transformed my entire life from there on out, and was inspired to figure out how to do more of it over the years. And really as one thing led to another. I mean, I've been in the business for a long time, but it really came as a result of being introduced and just having a passion for the participation in the sport itself.
Right. So what came first for you? Was it Evo first or skiing, like skiing at a professional level first?
So I was buying and selling gear from very, very early age. So before, like, you know, Evo existed as a company, I was already selling gear, and that started in kind of junior high and high school. So the official launch of evogear.com, the original website, was 2001, and I did that in my garage, and I was living between Seattle and Whistler at the time. So it really, you know, again, like while I was selling gear long before evogear.com existed and then the store existed, which we opened in 05. In a lot of ways, Evo, you know, kind of predates the actual launch of the site. The skiing part of it all came together when I moved to Whistler after my first season. I competed in a big mountain competition on Blackcomb, actually. And after getting done with my run, I got offered a pair of skis, and then kind of everything kind of built from there. But the team manager for K2 was at the contest, and I had actually known him because I'd interned there, but we had never skied together or anything like that. I kind of skied a loose and a line that I probably should have never skied, but it was enough to get me free skis. And I had a long, I kind of refer to it as like a long, like B- career. Like it was awesome. It was exactly how I wouldn't take anything back. And I say B- because it's never like 100% all in. I was definitely wasn't on the level of a lot of others, but I was able to really have a fun, like long career that introduced me to a lot of great people and experiences. And I ended up, you know, representing brands like K2 and Smith and Patagonia, Burn, a couple others. And yeah, it was awesome. So all of that kind of ran in parallel. I launched, that would have been like 90, not, it's funny to even say that, but, I moved to Whistler in 97. So that would have been kind of that year. And I was, again, I was bringing demos and selling them on eBay. So I was still selling gear online previous to 2001, and doing that just under kind of my name. And I had a little business set up. And then in 01 was the launch of the site.
Awesome. And I think, yeah, I remember, I forget where I heard it. It must have been on like the Powell movement or something, where you're talking about like the biggest, or he mentioned actually, that the biggest thing for you was just getting a travel budget. I mean, is that like what it was for you? Was just like you wanting to go and ski places and like not having to pay? Like, was that the biggest deal, or was it that you had aspirations to be something bigger as an athlete, or was that just kind of like the side deal?
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm trying to take myself back to different chapters. I mean, it was like a 15-year run. And so, but I'm sure there were times when I would have loved to have been like, you know, the guy. You know, there's no doubt your kind of ego takes over and you'd love to achieve at the very highest level. But I also made a lot of decisions that, you know, I never like fully went all in because of Evo and other projects and another and school and work and other things that I was doing. So, and again, not to say that even had I gone fully in that I would have achieved that, just because there's some ridiculously good athletes and so have no idea if I would have been able to get to that level. That said, I think that I know for sure over the last, call it even 5+ years, I was really happy with where I was. I was able to travel with, you know, awesome people and see parts of the world I would have hoped to have seen, but this opened those doors, built a lot of the relationships that have translated into Evo today, and made just like lifelong friends, you know, living between Whistler and then, you know, living in Argentina and going to both South America and Europe and Alaska and all those places. So anyways, I think, you know, by the end of it, especially with family and with all the other things that happen and just having also lost, you know, some really good friends along the way, given the kind of dangers of the sport, like all of those things kind of intersected. And it was kind of obvious to me that it was time to move on. But yeah, it was absolutely a lot of fun. And on the financial side, I think that, you know, what, yeah, came up. I mean, I was incredibly thankful to get any kind of checks from skiing. And then that did happen for a while. But it was never the thing I was like leaning on most heavily to figure out how to pay the bills.
Right. Okay. I guess that makes sense. I mean, so what made you want to start your own company? I mean, it's one thing, I guess, to be buying and selling gear on eBay or Craigslist or whatever it is, but what made you want to run your own company?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I would, like, in grade school, I was buying and selling baseball cards that turned into, you know, car stereos and cars and ultimately gear. And so I don't know. It was just in me. Like, it was just kind of how I was wired. And I often get the question, is that the kind of, you come from a family of entrepreneurs? And I don't. I mean, my parents, my mom was a teacher and my dad is an industrial and safety hygienist. So he works, he's a safety guy essentially at a nuclear power plant in Washington. And so very, very different careers and different, you know, just like areas of focus. Yet at the same time, I think like what I took from them really were values and things that apply to the business, not necessarily kind of the entrepreneurial part of like kind of who I am. So I don't think there's ever a moment where I was like, I really want to run a company. It's just like how it always was. And it just evolved from, you know, baseball cards at a card show to kind of doing what we do today. And it wasn't necessarily a moment. It's just kind of a kind of evolutionary process.
Right. And I think so. Evo is started at least as an online retail, and that's how we kind of, and a lot of us in the industry, I guess, knew Evo for a long time. Even when you guys had your first store, it was still you know, Evo the online retailer. What, why online, and what made you think that like, okay, like this online thing is going to work for snow gear as well as it's going to work for, you know, whatever it's going to work for, you know, buying books or, you know, baseball cards or whatever?
Well, I'd say it was actually really kind of opportunistic, meaning like someone introduced me to eBay and I was like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. And this can allow me to pick up and travel and ski,
right. So,
among other things, you know. And I wasn't necessarily like, this is the next massive thing, but it was happening. And the transactions that I saw and the way that kind of eBay at that point in time was just like dominating. It was just, I saw, you know, again, someone introduced me to it. I started listing some things. And it worked. And what it did is just allowed me to essentially take bets on real estate, on gear and product and inventory that I wouldn't have been able to because I didn't have the channel to actually sell it. And so right. when I started seeing that work, and then you could actually do the research in eBay with like what stuff was selling for, it was pretty, it didn't even feel like taking a bet because I had a good idea of what the outcome was going to be, especially given I had zero cost, right? Like I had a DSL line and literally like pre all this, I had like a pager and it turned into a cell phone one day. It's pretty funny, but anyways, my costs were almost nothing. And I had an old crappy, car that was worth about $1,000. And I just picked up and skied and lived on couches. So, to be able to do that and for the internet to help facilitate like that lifestyle and like, let me be flexible, while I was kind of running, running with this kind of ski thing and finishing school and like traveling around the world, like that, the internet was just, again, it was, without that, I wouldn't have been able to kind of, be able to pursue all those other things. And then ultimately, after, the launch of the site and then kind of growing that and seeing this like big appetite out there in the market, outside of just the transactional piece, so we could sell things, I really was inspired to build a company that stood for something. And what I identified in Seattle initially was just that there's this like really like passionate, hungry community of people that shared these interests, whether it be ski, snowboard, just being in the mountains, and then also having this kind of professional life, being in the city, and then the kind of the cultural elements, music and art and philanthropy and these other things. All of that, do you need to be in there? Oh yeah. So all of that, became apparent, and I just felt like there wasn't a place. Like, where did all this come together, And so that's what led to opening the store, creating this flexible space where we could have events and really bring the community together. Right. And so I think that was such a massive transition as a business because on evogear.com and our site, we had certain values that kind of had how we ran the company and whatnot, but it really didn't come to life in the way that it did once we opened our store in 2005.
Right. And I guess that kind of segues into the next thing that I was going to ask. So like, everybody seems to be moving away from brick and mortar retail, and you guys seem to be moving towards it. It's mm-hmm. not every day you see, mom and pop shops closing or, mm-hmm. People just moving their businesses to directly online models. And now we have Evo, mm-hmm. which is like, was one of the pioneers in online retail for this industry, is mm-hmm. starting to open more stores. You guys have mm-hmm. Seattle, Portland, and in Denver, I think, which is the mm-hmm. most recent one, right? What's the process? Is it just to like create a community around something, or what's the thought process?
Yeah, well, I gotta say, I when you asked the question, it made me think of a lot of questions that I got hit with, even when we had our first store, and people were saying, why do you have a store? Like, we all know stores are going away. It's going to be internet only. And I was like, no. Certain stores and are going to go away. And there's a reason why this shift is happening. Yet at the same time, the pendulum is going to land in the middle. It's not going to be, all internet, no stores, or, or anything even close to that. Now, like for us, we really, again, fundamentally have this different experience in the store that augments what we do online. So to be able to deliver that experience in 3D is something that we just simply can't do any other way than having great stores. And then in addition to that, with what we do from a product perspective, it's like that service and that technical know-how and all those things that relate to the, the sports that we represent, like there's just certain things that you just cannot offer in the same way you can in the store. So we've always believed in it. It's been really fun, I would say, to like see it swing back and then not just because of our store, but others that you see out there that are really looking to strike that balance where they can deliver that kind of like face-to-face, hands-on experience, bring the community together, do other things above and beyond just sell you stuff. And then also though drive, again, both channels as a result of the, of the other channel. So for example, the web all day long is driving great traffic into our stores. But in addition to that, because we have a physical footprint in a market, we're seeing a swing up in the way of our web business as well. So they're incredibly complementary. And, I think that it was all e-commerce and then it became quote unquote omni-channel. And like, I think it's just like, we're going to start calling it retail here really soon, just because that's just how, right. The best way or the best customer experience. So yeah. And I think, and for us, it's not, I also get the question, you know, why are your stores just marketing? Are they kind of like loss leaders? And like, absolutely not. I mean, we're not going out there just opening doors to the kind of, you know, again, kind of expose what we do on the web or drive business to the web. Like it's, the stores can stand up on their own 2 feet. That said, as a result of the fact that we have this established web business, you know, that it's that much stronger. And the other whole piece of the puzzle is we love it. Like we, to be able to create an experience and bring people into the fold and share that with other people, like that's what drives us fundamentally. It's not about how do we sell you more stuff. And I think with that intent, with that in our DNA and that kind of coming to life in these different experiences, you know, our belief and what we've seen is that shines through and that actually drives a solid business. So we're not like in some rush to open like tons of stores. Cause if we do that, we'll lose our way. I mean, it's just what we do is, and we're 16 years in, we're 17 years in October, we have 3 stores, you know? So will we move faster than 3 every 17 years? Absolutely. But it's not, we just don't have the kind of store where you stamp a bunch out. Cause if we did that, then we'd be unraveling what kind of made us who we are and would have made those stores successful thus far.
Right. And I think that makes a lot of sense because like you're replacing stores that weren't doing it well basically, or that were doing it well and some things weren't working, and you're kind of incorporating this model, like this almost proven model at this point, and building on it. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting to see how, you know, the shops that aren't able to serve their customer and don't have loyal bases, I guess, are going by the wayside, you know, and whereas in years past people would just buy to buy, and now like people are seeking out that kind of community experience, I guess.
I think so. I think people like they want to be connected, and that's another thing you see all kind of white papers and business articles about, like as a result of technology and these other influences, like people are kind of yearning for that connection, and that's timeless, right? That's not a new thing. It might be a little bit more heightened now, but people want to be a part of something, and they want to know that what they're kind of getting behind as a consumer, it kind of aligns with their values. And, you know, we have so many ways we can be so much better, you know, like any business. But what we do know is that like when we can stay true to that, and as we look to kind of light up these experiences that are expression of those values, like that's resonated, and we think we'll continue to, given that fundamentally people want to be, you know, part of something that actually, again, aligns with what they, with what they care about.
Right. And I guess kind of segueing from that, when I had reached out to you initially to do this, you had mentioned, you were like, yeah, we'll do it. Like, that sounds great, but you should talk to Ben. And Ben had actually already contacted me before
I had even reached out to you.
And that's, he was perfect. Like, you know, for the La Familia program. And that was something mm-hmm. that, like, when he emailed me initially, I was like, okay, like, this sounds really good, but what's the catch? And then Shad, who's right. Shad Bradley, who's a buddy of mine that works in your Portland store.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, oh, you should do it. And I was like, you know, what's the catch? Even coming from him. So, I mean, talk to us a little bit, like, what's the deal? And, you know, I got the rundown from Ben a few weeks ago at SBA.
Sure.
And, like, I think it sounds great, but I guess it's different hearing it from you. So what do you think?
Yeah. Well, it all came from an observation. I was actually in Bend, Oregon, and it's where my parents live. And I just, you know, came across this awesome shop that I heard about. And I guess to fast forward, really what the observation is, that there's great retailers across the nation in all kinds of markets where, you know, we have customers, but we're not going to physically be, and we shouldn't be. I mean, to be able to open that many stores, just, you're going to just not do it in a special way. If we tried to do it at that scale. And even beyond that, you have these different takes on what retail and that experience should be in those markets. And the proprietors, the business people that are going to do that best, the ones that are from there, that care about that area, have history, have relationships, all of that. So, you know, with that being said, and knowing that they deliver something that we believe is fundamentally important for our customers, which is to be on the ground, offer that experience and service, you know, we also are doing something online where we know, you know, we have customers in these markets, and we're like, well, you know, there's a huge element of trust in this whole thing, because, you know, our take was, well, why don't we think about what is best for the customer? And then our belief is that as a result, there will be loyalty, and we'll drive conversion. We'll do other things that will be good for the businesses. So what we came up with was, we're not going to be on the ground. We are going to be on the web. We know we're doing those markets. Why are we not sending our customers into great retailers that can get the full experience? Because we're offering only part of that. Now, again, the trust is two-way, and that's why the kind of what's the catch? It's like, well, why are you sending your customers into our front door, and like, how are you getting that back? And well, again, we believe that, yeah, there's absolutely going to be sales that will happen. That's the whole point. You got to drive traffic to get sales. So there absolutely will be sales in the stores, whether it be service or add-on sales, or even they exchange something that didn't work that they bought it with us and they buy it from the retailer. That's going to happen. That's the point. But again, as a result of delivering the better customer experience, both web and store, we believe that we'll get it creates a competitive advantage for Evo online when they're looking at us versus others and buying online. Like, well, who has got the network? How can they serve me, you know, where I live in ways that I need right. to be served? And as a result of now having this network, we're able to do that. Now, I will say that, like, it's still early. I mean, what we're doing from everything I've seen hasn't been done. And we are looking like, okay, how do we inject more value into the network? Like, what are we doing so that for everybody involved, us included, like, how are we saying this is an absolute no-brainer? And so we have this right now, you know, the kind of major pillars of it are ship to store. And now the store, you know, again, driving conversion in the store. And then also if there's something that the stores, you know, all of our stores, ours included, have limited inventories. If the manufacturer doesn't have something where they can sell it at full margin, they can draw off our inventory and get a revenue share. So those are the two main components right now, outside of the marketing we do and whatnot, to kind of shine a light on what we believe are like the best stores across the nation. But we have other kind of moves that we're looking to make that, again, create more value going both directions. And I think that, again, the kind of foundational belief is that we know that for a customer to be able to shop online and get the benefits of online, but also get that experience in the store, that's just better. And so how we actually monetize that on both ends, like we're looking to do that in certain ways right now, but over time, as we layer more in, there's just going to be, we think, a net positive and creates a competitive advantage, not just for us, but for the network that we've helped kind of put together. So that's where it all came from, and that's where it is. And we, we're excited about it. I mean, we're going to keep opening stores slowly in key markets. But before we go, or not before, like instead of focusing energy on other places where we know we won't be as good as a local retailer, we will. You know, we'll look overseas and look at the kind of deploying our resources into other things so long as we can build a really healthy kind of specialty retail network that is La Familia.
Right. And I think, I mean, you're right. I mean, I don't think it's been done before. It's definitely, and that's part of the reason I think that my initial reaction was like, what do you want from right. me again? Like, you know, like, it's,
right.
And I guess it's just a different way to look at it, but it's definitely interesting. And I think it's going to work out well.
Well, one of the things too is it has taken us a while. We know this is one of the biggest tricks because this is where like the quote unquote like trust comes from. But like, so the two major metrics, you know, with traffic and conversion, like you need to drive traffic to convert a customer, whether it be on the web or in the store, this is the same thing, right? And then you've got your kind of average order value and margin and whatnot. But if you don't have traffic, you don't have conversion. So, you know, the thing that we've talked about is like, well, we're going to drive very qualified traffic and then you're going to have an opportunity to convert them in different ways. Well, up until recently, we had a really hard time measuring what that conversion was for people that were picking up in the store, because we have a like between 30-40% of our orders in the metros where we have stores, those web orders get picked up in our store. So, for example, if you're living around Seattle store, 40% of orders placed on the online get picked up in our store. And so then what we're like, well, that's great, but what is actually happening once they're in the store? So with that first visit, not including anyone they might come with or visit with the store with, or not including when they come back as a result, that first visit when they're coming to pick up the store, we're converting those customers at 12-17%, depending on the location, at an average order of $178. So If we're sending 40% of all of those orders into our store and then 12% of those people on that one visit are converting at $178, now we have an understanding of the incrementality because of that buy online, pick up in store. Now, getting to that number through our partners is a lot harder because it's right. like it's technology and POS and whatnot. But the thing we do have now is real numbers that prove that like that is extremely valuable traffic. And again, there's a lot more ways in which that becomes value. You're introducing people to a new environment. You're sharing with them your brand. They're likely coming back for other reasons. But just with that one visit, we're actually able to show the incrementality in our three locations. So anyways, again, it's not like, boom, you know, there's no silver bullet in getting to that data across the network. But that's been a real eye-opener for us and something that we're now sharing, kind of, we're being very transparent about, because we're like, you know, this was the premise originally, and now we're actually have some data to share, and let's put our heads together and how we can kind of get better about that. But that's really, really awesome to get to. And that's been more recent for us.
Right. And I think, so how do you go about finding people to run a company like this? And that's one of the struggles that I think every retailer in the country has, is like finding good people is always what everybody talks about. But every time I go into one of your guys' stores, or I meet somebody, like I met Ben a few weeks ago for the first time, and the dude's awesome. Like, he's got a ton of experience. Like, I don't know where, like, that's what I'm trying to figure out, is like, where you guys find these kind of people, you know, because they're great.
That's a great question. I mean, it's funny because while we are really happy with our team, we're growing and evolving as well. And so it's like talent and key talent is a never-ending discussion. Well, I say one thing, and this is, I don't know if this helps at all, but like, we're extremely fortunate to be in Seattle. I realized that a few years ago when I was talking to someone else who ran an e-commerce business. They were pure play e-com, so different, but at the same time, a lot of the kind of the more technical needs and kind of specific kind of experience they needed, you know, were very similar to ours, and they were in California, in a place that I would assume there's plenty of talent. Well, she was the CEO, and she said, like, you'd be surprised. We just don't have that here. And so that was really an eye opener, just because I would just assume there'd be plenty of it. But Seattle is kind of this intersection of both retail and technology. And that makes it tough because the market's crazy, and the cost of living is really tough. And that's kind of a huge pressure for our entire team. At the same time, like, a lot of those key people are here, physically here, and they want to be here because of the access to the mountains. So that's been great. Now, something that I think would apply more broadly to everybody, I think that, you know, the being a part of something that actually is a reflection of a reflection of their personal values is absolutely critical. Like, what am I a part of when I go into work day in, day out? Like, you know, how is success defined? Is it just simply selling more stuff? Because if that's it, we know that's fleeting. You know, is it tying people to their passions? Well, yeah, in our industry, it absolutely is. So there's one box that's checked. In addition to that, like, as we grow, or as we have a profitable year, or as we just kind of day in, day out manage the business, like, what is the other layer? You know, what does this stand for? What are the values of the proprietors? Like, you know, does that reflect what I care about? And I think that, you know, again, it's kind of this, it's timeless and it's ageless, but, you know, we all want to work in a place that is going above and beyond in regards to, like, the impact it can have. And for us specifically, well, we empower our team with volunteer paid time off to donate that wherever they please. We have a week a year for full-time staff to volunteer, again, whatever organization they want to work with. As an organization, we get behind working with specifically to support organizations that work with at-risk youth. And again, if that at-risk youth or whatever the area of focus is, that's not the point. The point is I think that it's like, you know, the industry has one thing, which is great, which is like, people have a passion for being in the mountains, or, you know, being in a skate park, or whatever the activity is. So that's like one really important step or piece of the puzzle. I think in addition to that, it's like, okay, so, you know, if we're doing well, like, how are we positively impacting kind of our community, our local community? And that is something that I think doesn't just apply to our industry, it just applies to business as a whole. And I mean, I know it does. I mean, and, you know, a great example, of course, is Patagonia. There are others, but I do believe that while it's kind of a fundamental observation, I think that people tend to agree with, it still isn't as widespread, and common as it really needs to be. And, you know, again, if you think about the kind of aggregate impact, if and when that is just how things are done, it's just like incredible, you know, like how much positive can come from it. So, I don't know, those are the first things that come to mind. You know, there's also all of your kind of the usual suspects that relate to just people's, you know, personal development and growth. Right. I will say that while, again, we've been growing and we've created opportunity, it's never ending. Like, you can never have enough opportunity. And so we're always trying to figure out how can we get better at that part of it as well. But yeah, I think that kind of at least sums up my first thoughts.
That's a good answer. That's for sure. Let's see. So, I mean, one of the things that I struggle with, I think more than anything, at least it feels like lately, is finding a balance, I guess, between work, work, life, family, that kind of stuff. I guess that's the big question for everybody, right? Like, how do you keep that stuff in balance? And I mean, you're juggling a lot of things all the time too, right? So
yeah,
how do you do it? And I'm sure like nobody's perfect at it, but like, what's your setup?
Yeah, talk about a never-ending moving target, right? Well, first I'd say that balance is entirely relative to the person. I mean, there are people that are fully balanced that live what we would think are crazy lives, but again, are able to kind of navigate that in a way that works for them. And there are others that, you know, are completely out of balance that have less going on. So I think that's one thing we always got to keep in mind, because it's easy to kind of observe, like, you know, and can assume based on kind of what is normal for you. For me personally, yeah, it's something I got to keep an eye on all the time, because I have an absolute, I'm like really passionate about like building things and projects and working with people across all kinds of different, businesses. So I gotta stay on it. As you can imagine, it's an ongoing topic, especially as it relates to family. There's nothing more important than my family, and what I always gotta be very cognizant of is like, where am I? You know, it's not just time, right? It's really just being present, and like, I can go home at 5, but like how engaged am I from 5 on? You know, that's you know, that again, just for me personally, that's something that's an ongoing topic, something that I got to continue to kind of manage. But I also say that I feel insanely fortunate, because, you know, I the participation in what got me into this business in the first place is something that has not waned. It's where I would hope it would be. I'm not skiing as many days as I did when I was living on couches in Whistler, but I'm getting plenty of days outside, whether it be surfing, mountain biking, skiing, snowboarding. And then I've got 2 kids, and then my wife, who came to Northwest to be in the mountains, like, we share that together. And, you know, Saturday we had a hilarious morning of snowboarding, and like the euphemism in the Northwest that it is constantly used is wintry mix, which really means like rain. It had snowed like 2 feet, and it's like pouring rain, and we're just laughing. Right. So anyways, those are keying, like making sure that that's like just ongoing part of our personal lives, and that I'm kind of managing myself, or having other people call me out when I'm when I'm like too engaged, or I'm like, you know, taking on too many projects, like all of that comes to mind. And again, I'm the furthest from saying like, you know, I've got plenty to figure out, but it is definitely a huge area of focus. And one of our values at Evo, we call it balanced ambition. And it kind of sums it up, the 2 words. We're ambitious and we want to do big things, but at the expense of family and friends and our personal lives, like that's just not acceptable. Like we need to be constantly focused on how we, you know, are managing our lives professionally and personally to make sure that we do strike that balance.
Right. I guess it's definitely hard to keep it all in check, but it's good to hear that. I guess everybody has that issue, and it's not just like, it's not just me, you know? Right. So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is the past life. And I don't know, that's something I wasn't even aware of until pretty recently. So why don't you give me the rundown on that? What's the deal with that? What's your involvement level?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, things come full circle, but I when I was living in Whistler, and now starting to spend more time back in Seattle, I like wanted to have a place where all of our team could come together in the mountains. And I skied up at Alpental, this awesome little place. It's like 45 minutes from downtown Seattle. And it was always just kind of scratching my head. It's like, here's this like really fun ski place where there's anywhere from the craziest backcountry kind of expert kind of all-time terrain down to like the magic carpet and everything in between. But it just feels like there's something missing. And so I ended up buying a house there that we called the Branch, and it was where all of our staff could go and be in the mountains together. And over time, I had identified just like there was just there wasn't a center for the community. I mean, really, it's the same story as Evo. I was like, wow, why isn't there a place where all this kind of comes together? I mean, half of the experience of being in the mountains, at least, if not more, isn't just like sliding down the hill or mountain biking, but it's like, you know, sharing a beer with your friends and family afterwards,
right.
You know, meeting new people to share those passions. All of that is like, we all have those kind of the best ever après sessions, you know, and like there isn't a place where people could come together for a good meal or a drink. And so I started looking for a place where we could essentially build that. And that was in 2007. I actually put this property into contract. This is all during the heyday, mind you. So it sounds like we're going, you know, just
right.
pulling the trigger on all these big deals. And I actually was, but I had no business doing that because I was like, I'm not kidding you. Like, I should not have got a car loan back in that time.
Right.
And I was buying houses, you know, in real estate. But anyways, so that was pre-08. And I put this property in contract, and the entire intent was to create a place where people could come together. And I'll save a lot of the drama and saga and everything else, but we actually closed it in 11. So it was a contract in 07, closed the land in 11. And then 2 years later, brought our first commercial building and homes to the market. And opened a restaurant called the Commonwealth, which is the restaurant and bar that we own up there. And then there's a brewery called Drew Brew, and then a really cool Washington State Ski and Snowboard Museum. So that was really the whole reason the project existed. And you know, in addition to that, from a market perspective, I was like, God, this is insane. Like, there's 3 million people within 45 minutes. There's year-round recreation. And this just hasn't happened up here, even though there's, you know, up to 600,000 skier visits a year alone, just in the winter. And so to use like the past life project as a springboard into doing more up there is kind of where we are and where we're going. And we have much bigger plans and have been able to kind of make some moves just recently that will allow us to kind of build on that original kind of, you know, project. Now, the way I described that over the years is like the body existed, you know, like you had all of these things that created this body, but there was no heart. And so really our job was to drop the heart in the middle of the body. And to be that close to Seattle, and especially what's happened in Seattle over the last few years where people need that release valve to get outside, it's become that much more relevant. And so, you know, our bigger vision is to, you know, build the mountain town of the future. And that's that means a lot of things, but it's really a holistic approach to development. We're not just trying to build stuff and sell it. Like, we really want to create a place that's vibrant, that is designed to be a great place for all people, not just people that can, you know, afford expensive second homes, you know, that them too, it's everybody. But that's really kind of our intent there. And yeah, I'm excited about kind of where that'll take us, but we're in the throes of it and have a lot more coming. And yeah, it's been kind of a wild ride because I'm, you know, over a decade into it.
Right. You're like doing all kinds of stuff. You got restaurants now, you got the past life thing. You're busy, man. I give you a lot of credit.
Yeah. Well, the common thread's community. I mean, that was right. Why that project, that's why the project came to life. That's why Evo exists. You know, that's, you know, bringing people together to share a good meal, like really community design. There's a number of other things, but community is at the core of it all. And, hopefully that's evident, you know, when coming into contact with these different businesses, different projects.
Right. And that's one of the things I think is cool is that you guys, you approach everything in the same kind of way. Like, everything's going in that same, like the same backbone, I guess, to whatever you're doing. And that's, and again, that community thing is huge.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's the intent. So yeah. Well, appreciate that.
Good. Yeah. No problem. So where can people find you? Where can people find Evo?
Yeah, so we have three stores. As you mentioned earlier, we have Seattle, Portland, and Denver. And then we're just on the web at evo.com. And on our locations page, you can find all of our La Familia partners. So we have partners across the U.S., and then we're starting to build a really cool network, a global network with a partner in Japan and one in Europe.
Sweet. That's awesome. Awesome. Well, I won't keep you too much longer here. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you making the time for us.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, bud. We'll talk to you
all
soon.
All right. Take care. All
thanks. Right, hey, guys, this is Adam from the Out of Bounds Podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media at Out of Podcast and on our website at outofpodcast.com. Thanks.